quickly go through some points to refresh your memory. The Fourier transform is the most commonly used transform because the basis function is a sinusoid, and it's well established, and it's a convenient reference to have a sinusoid rather than some other waveform. But there are other transforms you should recognize, such as the Walsh transform, the Walsh-Hadamard transform that use square waves and rectangular waves as basis functions. And of course, recently, wavelets that use any kind of a wavelet that can be scaled to perform time scale analysis rather than frequency domain analysis in Hertz. The Fourier transform uses sinusoidal basis functions and has good history and good established procedures that will facilitate the analysis of Fourier spectra. What is done in the Fourier transform is the projection is computed of a signal, of the given signal x of t, onto a complex exponential basis function of frequency omega, and that is expressed as exponential j omega t equal to cosine omega t plus j sine omega t. So you have a cosine and a sine and a real and imaginary part, and you're using both. If you're using the Fourier series, then you'll be using one of them, and you can use the complex Fourier series by combining them, and you apply those to periodic signals to get line spectra. If you generalize the Fourier series to all frequencies and not just the fundamental and harmonics of a periodic signal, you get the Fourier transform where you use all omega. So the component x omega at a frequency omega that is present in a signal x of t is obtained by projecting x of t onto that function, exponential minus g omega t. Now this is a projection, it's a dot product, it's a generalization of a dot product, which is a projection in the analog situation. And typically, or in general, you can express this as minus infinity to infinity, but if the signal is causal, you would start from 0 to infinity. If it is a finite duration, you put 0 to t. We'll change those things later on. If you want, you can change to the frequency to Hertz, x of f equal to xt exponential minus j 2 pi ft, where f stands for frequency in Hertz, with omega being equal to 2 pi f. Now, there are some publications, especially in the mathematics literature and seismic signal processing literature, where this symbol is put as a plus for the forward transform, and then the inverse transform has a negative. In electrical engineering, it is common to use minus for the forward and plus for the reverse transform. It doesn't matter which way you do. There will be a change in phase there, but other than that, it's not significant. The idea is that when you are taking the projection of a signal onto another signal, one of those must be conjugated. If both are complex, one must be conjugated. So if you say you're going to conjugate this, then you put exponential minus g omega t. But I could say I'm conjugating my signal, and if it is real, it doesn't matter, and I can put exponential plus j omega t. Whatever it is, the inverse will have the other, the conjugate. So if this is minus here, it'll be plus there. If you put plus here, you put a minus in the other inverse transform. So if you read other papers with a plus here for the forward, don't get worried. So this is the analysis step of the Fourier transform. You are analyzing a given signal and asking how much of a certain frequency is present. If you want to know how much of 100 Hertz is present, you let f equal to 100 Hertz do this. The answer will be that quantity, that much of 100 Hertz is present. You can normalize that with reference to the total energy of the signal and say a certain percentage of the signal's energy is in this band. The inverse transform, you do the opposite in the sense you change the sign of the exponential, you conjugate it. So you take x omega, the function that you computed, the function of frequency that you got, and do the opposite. Multiply with the exponential function that corresponds to that frequency, And that is the amount of contribution of the sinusoid at that frequency to the regeneration of the signal. So XT is composed of the frequency omega with this much, and that component will contribute to the synthesis of the signal. And if you do that for all omega and add all the components up, or in the continuous case, integrate, you get your signal back. So X of T is regenerated or synthesized using these coefficients, X omega, along with the functions that they represent, the basis functions exponential j omega t, or xf exponential plus j 2 pi ft in, with frequency in hertz. And there's a 1 over 2 pi here that comes if you use omega. Otherwise, if you use f, you don't have that. So the forward and inverse transforms look symmetric with no coefficient outside, no constant outside if you use f. That's an advantage. So there is the analysis part and the synthesis part, or the forward transform and the inverse transform that we see. In the case of a discrete time signal, you could possibly maintain continuous frequency and compute this for all frequencies if you wish, and write x omega as the sum n going plus minus infinity to plus infinity, or 0 to n minus 1, whichever way you want to go. Xn, this is now a discrete time signal, need not be digital, we don't know what the values of x are, but could be digital, exponential minus j omega n. So just change the time to n, and strictly speaking, you would have to put nt there, the sampling interval, but if you normalize the sampling interval to 1, you could drop that. Otherwise, you should put n capital T there. The normalized frequency then is 0 to 1 for the frequency f, if you assume sampling rate of 1, or omega being between 0 and 2 pi. The lower limit of summation will be 0 if the signal is causal, and will be n minus 1. The upper limit will be 1 n minus 1 if you have n samples in the signal with finite duration. So that is the Fourier transform, where the time domain has been discretized. The frequency domain has not been discretized. There are a few variations in frequency, the representation of frequency. You could indicate the frequency omega as going from 0 to omega s, which is 2 pi fs, or the frequency in hertz going 0 to fs, or the normalized versions. Then you have to put that t in seconds. The Fourier transform is equivalent to the Z transform evaluated around the unit circle. So the Z transform being xn z to the power of minus n. Here we have z equal to exponential j omega. That represents the unit circle. So they are comparable in this sense. The Z transform is defined for the entire Z plane, complex Z plane, but if you evaluate it around the unit circle, you get the Fourier transform. An important property of sample signals is if you sample in the time domain, the corresponding Fourier transform of the discrete time sample signal is periodic. The period is equal to the sampling frequency omega s or 2 pi as you go around the unit circle in the Z domain. In the Laplace domain, the Fourier transform is evaluated along the vertical axis, which is the j omega axis. S equal to j omega, the vertical axis is the frequency axis, and it is of infinite extent for continuous time signals. Using bilinear transformation, we saw that that vertical axis in the S plane is mapped to the unit circle in the Z domain, and the Fourier transform of the sample signal now in the Z domain is evaluated around the unit circle. So obviously, if you go again around the unit circle, you get the same thing. So the Fourier transform of a sample signal is periodic, with period equal to 2 pi in omega. When processing digital signals, we have to discretize on a computer, we have to discretize the frequency also, and that can be done as omega equal to 2 pi fs over n k, or omega equal to 2 pi over n k if the frequency is normalized, and K is the frequency sample index, and N is the number of samples over one period that you use in your discrete Fourier transform. But then you have the DFT relationship, the discrete Fourier transform forward or analysis relationship, where xk is xn exponential minus j2 pi over n kn for k going 0 to n minus 1. That is one period of xk. The capital letter here indicates the frequency domain function. Assuming that the signal has n samples, the Fourier transform of a discrete time signal with n samples is completely determined by n samples of its Fourier transform, equally spaced around the unit circle in the z-plane. This is an important relationship that is proved in the book by Oppenheim and Schaefer, Digital Signal Processing or Discrete Time Signal Processing. I suggest you go through that proof in Oppenheim and Schaefer. It's a very interesting proof that says if you have n samples in the time domain, going around the unit circle to compute the discrete Fourier transform, you could sample as much as you wish. But for unique reconstruction or recovery of the time domain signal from the discrete Fourier transform, you must have a minimum of n samples equally spaced around the unit circle. And that is adequate. And you can get your signal completely back from this. So you don't have to express omega as a continuous variable. You sample it, but you must have a minimum of n samples. If you take any smaller number of samples, which you could if you want a reduced representation, there's nothing wrong, but you cannot come back to xn. You cannot recover xn from a smaller number of samples. Of course, you could sample more. You could get more samples and compute it for more frequency values if you wish, but that is simply additional computation, and these values could be interpolated from the n values if necessary. In practice, if you're using FFT algorithms that require the number of samples to be 2 to the power of an integer value, it is common to pad zeros and then at the end of the signal and then take an FFT that is longer than n samples. You get more samples then of the Fourier transform. The inverse discrete Fourier transform or synthesis relationship that gives back the signal xn is xk multiplied with exponential now plus j2 pi divided by n times kn. For all n, now this is the time domain index. You compute it for all time. There is a factor 1 over n that comes in here, and that leads to a bit of an asymmetry between the forward and inverse transforms. And that will be required to conserve energy and satisfy Parseval's rule between the forward and inverse transforms. The sampling frequency variable, or sampling of the frequency variable, causes the signal to be periodic in the time domain. Now, frequency has been sampled, 2 pi divided by n. If you sample the signal, the Fourier transform becomes periodic. If you sample the Fourier transform, which is done to get the DFT, the corresponding time domain signal becomes periodic. In practice, we have signals of finite duration and samples. The inverse transform in the Z domain is evaluated by going around the unit circle, the same thing. So obviously, if you go around the unit circle doing the inverse transform again, you get the same thing. So the time domain signal that is computed using the discrete Fourier transform is also periodic. If it is a finite observation signal, finite duration signal that you have observed and recorded and you are analyzing, then the periodicity is immaterial. The same signal is simply repeated. You only consider one period. It is not periodicity of the signal itself, but a consequence of computing the discrete Fourier transform. So all of these equations are now defined for n going 0 to n minus 1 or k going 0 to n minus 1. the basis functions exponential j 2 pi over n kn is cosine of that and j sine of that same thing. So these are sine and cosine functions of normalized frequency. The frequency is 1 over n times k. K going 0 to n minus 1. So this is normalized now in the range 0 to 1. If you want to get the frequency in hertz, you multiply by fs, the sampling frequency. And then you get that in hertz. The discrete Fourier transform is more readily seen as a dot product or projection of the given signal xn onto each complex exponential function exponential minus j2 pi over nkn. So each one of these is clearly now an array or vector of samples. So you can view the signal xn with n samples as a vector in the n-dimensional space. And correspondingly, this also has n samples for a given k, for a given frequency. So what you're doing is obviously a dot product. So again, you are asking the question, how much of this is present in my signal? The answer is xk, which is a complex quantity with magnitude and phase. The inverse DFT is clearly, again, a synthesis of the signal xn as a linear combination of the exponential basis function, the weight of each one being the corresponding coefficient xk. So in the analysis, you're taking a dot product of the given signal with this basis function for each k, and the result is xk that tells you how much of that component is present. What is the strength of the frequency k, or the sinusoid of frequency k in my signal? That is xk. To recompose the signal, you say xn has so much of the complex sinusoid of frequency k, that's xk. So you're taking a linear combination of these exponentials for all k and compute that for all n. That gives you the signal back. The weight for this linear combination of the exponential functions is xk. Okay? There are a few important properties of the DFT, of the Fourier transform. Here we will say DFT, but in general of the Fourier transform. Some are specific to the DFT, and some are applicable to the Fourier transform in general. I'll mention these as we go along. You would have seen all of these, so I'll go through quickly, but if something is not clear, please stop and ask. A signal xn and its DFT xk are both periodic sequences, as I explained just now. So that is DFT, not the Fourier transform. If a signal xn has n samples, its DFT xk must be computed with at least n samples equally spaced over the normalized frequency range omega between 0 and 2 pi. That's around the unit circle in the Z domain. For complete representation and determination of X omega and exact reconstruction of Xn as the inverse DFT. I mentioned that. You may use more than n samples to compute Xk if you wish. To use an FFT algorithm with L equal to 2 to the power of m, where m is an integer and that should be greater than n. Or to obtain X omega with finer frequency sampling. If you want to know the value for 100 hertz and 100.1 hertz and 100.2 hertz and so on, you could compute this for whatever frequency you wish. The DFT is linear. The Fourier transform is linear. So if you have a linear combination of two signals, then their transforms are also linearly combined in the same way. And this is useful in filtering noise that is added to the signal where the Fourier transforms are also correspondingly added. The DFT of a delayed signal, xn minus n0, is equal to the DFT of the original signal multiplied by this phase factor. The magnitude of this is 1. It's only a phase factor, exponential minus j2 pi over nkn0. And this is linear with frequency, so it is an additional linear phase component. So a time shift leads to a linear component being added to the phase of the signal. The magnitude is unaffected. Now, in the case of the discrete Fourier transform, we said both are periodic, the signal and its transform, with period n. So when we're talking about shift, we have to recognize that shifting will be circular or periodic shift. When you shift a signal in the frame of 0 to n samples, or 0 to n minus 1, what goes outside will come back or will go into the next period of the signal, and the previous period of the signal will bring the same here at the beginning, unless you have padded the signal with 0. With zeros at the end. So if at least n0 zeros have been padded or exist in the signal, the circular shift will be equal to linear shift. But if that has not been done or you don't have zeros at the end, circular shift will be different from linear shift. And hence circular convolution will be different from linear convolution, that you should note. So the DFT of xn times hn, or convolved with hn, the star is convolution, is xk multiplied with hk. And that is true for the Fourier transform, the Z transform, the Laplace transform. The inverse DFT of the product, of course, is equal to the convolution of the corresponding signals. Similarly, if two signals are multiplied in the time domain, their transforms are convolved. There is the symmetry in this relationship either way from time to frequency. So multiplication in one domain is convolution in the other domain. In order to do this now, all signals must have the same number of samples. So if you're asked to convolve two signals and one has n1 samples and the other has n2 samples and you want to do it using the Fourier transform, you have to pad zeros and make them both equal, otherwise you will not be able to do this multiplication on a point-by-point basis. All sequences in DFT relationships are periodic, and convolution operations in the DFT relationships are periodic convolution and not linear. This is important and sometimes ignored, leading to artifacts in FFT-based computations or DFT-based computations. Circular or periodic convolution is defined for periodic signals having the same period. So you must have signals of the same number of samples or add zeros to make them so. And the result will also be periodic with the same period. I have also missed this in one of the problems I have given in the book. I gave two signals of different lengths and asked in the problem to compute linear and circular convolution. So I'm repeating this, but of course sometimes we miss these points. And I have put a correction to one of these problems. So this is an important point that we all know, but sometimes may miss or ignore. The result of linear convolution of two signals, xn and hn, with durations nx and nh, will have a duration of nx plus nh minus 1 samples. Convolution will always make the result longer, linear convolution. If linear convolution is desired via the inverse DFT of XK, HK, and FFT found primary application here because one could reduce the number of computations required. Comparing direct convolution in the time domain with taking the FFT, multiplying and taking the inverse FFT, it would still be cheaper, faster, to do convolution using the FFT. And there are some situations where special purpose convolution hardware was designed for digital convolution, and then convolution could be done directly in the time domain samples. But one of the major advantages brought out by the development of the FFT algorithm was this, that one could go to the frequency domain applying the FFT, get the discrete Fourier transforms, multiply them point by point, take the inverse transform and come back, and you got the result of convolution, and that would take a smaller number of computations and hence be faster than doing the convolution in the time domain. If you want linear convolution using the DFT, you have to use L, the number of samples greater than nx plus nh minus 1 by zero padding. Otherwise, you get circular convolution which is not what a real-life linear shift invariant filter does. A real-life physical linear shift invariant filter does linear convolution. Okay? So all signals and DFTs are periodic with the augmented period L, but because you put zeros at the end, the result of periodic convolution will be equal to the result of linear convolution. You are allowing the result to expand in time over the parts where you put zeros in the input signals. So there are some more properties. We'll go for a few more minutes and take a break in 10 minutes. The DFT of a real signal xn possesses conjugate symmetry. X minus k for the negative frequency is x star k for the positive frequency. And that is seen also from the z domain, the unit circle. And if you have poles and zeros occurring in conjugate pairs, what happens in the upper half of the unit circle is the same as what happens in the lower half of the unit circle. A consequence of this is real part and magnitude of xk are even sequences, and the imaginary part in the phase of xk are odd sequences. So the magnitude spectrum has even symmetry, the phase has odd symmetry. Parseval's theorem says that the total energy of the signal should remain the same before and after transformation. And that can be expressed in many different ways. The integral of x squared t or xt square is equal to 1 over 2 pi integral of x omega square if you're using the continuous representation. The sum of xn square is equal to the integral of magnitude x omega square with the frequency now going plus pi to minus pi or 0 to 2 pi. Here, time is discretized, frequency is continuous if you wish. If you use DFTs, then the time domain is n, the frequency domain is discretized to k, and in this case, they are both of duration n, or the number of samples is equal to n. So the sum of the square of all the samples in the time domain must be equal to the sum of the magnitude squared values of the DFT. And for that, you have the 1 over n or 1 over 2 pi as the normalization factor. It is convenient if you were to change omega to f, frequency in hertz, then the 2 pi goes away and you have integrals that look the same without that factor. So there are some derivations in textbooks that switch from omega to 2 pi to get rid of that 2 pi factor, or rather omega to f. So all of these integrals that we have seen are representatives of the total energy of the signal, or average power if you divide by time. So for this reason, magnitude x omega square or magnitude xk square are called the power spectral density as a function of frequency. So what these tell you is how much of the energy of the signal is contained at that frequency, or strictly speaking, integrating over a certain range of frequencies. So that's why it is called the density. Okay. The next question is, how do you estimate the power spectral density function? And we will take a break and come back in 10 minutes.